So I'm very happy to sit with you again for a little sangha meeting, you could say, with questions and answers. Now, I do have a stock of questions here, but I do feel much more interesting if even those who have written me these notes, if you could speak up and say the question, because then I understand you much better. I have difficulties to know really what is meant with just these few sentences. So feel free to speak up, and I'm happy to answer or to share whatever is necessary. Please, yeah, you can help me with all the different ones. She was the first. This essence that I have been talking about. Also, another question here was about the source, to tap into the source, and then what is this? Is this consciousness, and what happens when awareness meets with it? Yes, this is your question. Here we have the finger pointing to the moon, and the finger is not the moon. This image of the essence does not mean that there is something to be found. We are talking about consciousness, we are talking about mind. It is not something else than awareness or mind. And actually, that which we call the source or the nature or essence of mind is the same mind as now, when it is not producing any clouds, any veils, yeah? No curtains, nothing which veils the direct perception. And this open awareness without those clouds is actually not an empty space, it is a dynamic space full with qualities. So in that awareness, naturally love, generosity, and so on, these qualities, they are naturally there when there is something in the situation that would invite them. Then naturally they are there, because there's nothing which hinders them. So it's like the ground potential of our mind. There's different main names for that. Are you any further with your question now? Did it help? Yes? Okay. Then please, Lila, help me to see who is the next one. Shachar. Yes.
And then when you add the breathing, so it becomes for me that the breath is much more gross for me, because when I'm in the spaciousness, so the breathing almost doesn't exist, actually it's very, very, very gentle.
I repeat quickly for the other. So the question is about the spaciousness and the relationship with breathing, how we do the meditation. And you have the feeling that when the breathing comes in, that this is much more gross than the spaciousness, and that in which there is hardly any noticing of breathing. And breathing is unimportant in that spaciousness.
Yeah, for me it's like a two different technique.
Mm-hmm. So this is a wonderful question to talk about yet another speciality of this approach. The speciality of this approach is to bring together spaciousness and precision. Because just one You cannot handle the world. You cannot be active in the world. To be active in the world, you have to be precise. You know this from your job, from whatever you're doing, from talking with people. One has to be precise. Every word is important. And even when you make a nice flower arrangement, there is precision in that arrangement. And when you cook and so on. So there is a need for precision. And in that precision, we could get lost because we are often too much glued in the fixation. The precision becomes a fixation. So we learn to be precise, like precisely reaching out to touch, very precisely with a light touch, with a spacious mind, to say words to you, to answer to your question, while the mind remains spacious. So this is the bringing together of the spaciousness and the breath. The breath is just an example of precision. So when you think it is too gross, actually then I invite you to discover the more subtle aspects of breathing. And then you will come deeper and deeper and you will see what we call the dynamic of mind is very similar to breathing. There's a sensitivity which is similar to the in-breath, and there's a creativity which is similar to the out-breath. It's as if you were watching in the breathing process, you watch the arising and passing on of whole worlds. Yeah, it becomes very subtle and universal. And this is due to connecting spaciousness with the simple method of breathing. So this is where there is a big difference maybe to what you have learned so far. The breath was maybe just an anchor for mindfulness and you didn't go so deep with that. And it's typical for Mahamudra that whatever we take as a meditation object, we will always take it in the most subtle and also symbolic sense. We go into the depths of what is possible there to discover that. So for example, I've used this example before, but I make it more because you're interested in spaciousness. I will ask you to meditate on a flower bouquet. Yes, here. And first it seems to be just an ordinary flower bouquet. But then I will ask you to meditate on the spaces where you can see through the flowers. You see the flowers and you see the space. Then to meditate the flowers with the spaces in between and the spaces around. So you have spaciousness in your awareness and you have the object. Then you will see that, then I would ask you to close the eyes and to see the flowers in your mind. And then to look into that after image of the flowers and to see it's like a rainbow. And then to open the eyes and to become aware of the seeing process actually at the same time as there is the seeing of something seemingly solid, it is a rainbow-like experience. So we would go like that. We would always combine the spacious aspect with the precision and see how the two finally work together. And for activity, it is very important because activity in this world means in order to be helpful in this world, we always need to remain as open as possible and then as precise with a loving awareness, completely precise in what we are doing. So we need to bring them together. And this is the little exercise that we shared now. It's one of the examples. You will do the same with walking. You probably are familiar with walking meditation. Now, in the walking, it's not only the precision of feeling your soles and feeling the changes of equilibrium and going through your whole body. It's not only being aware of the breathing, but actually you are moving in space. There is, and there is space, so to speak, flowing around you. Then you begin to notice how you're walking and that while walking, actually, the experience of walking itself happens in that spacious dimension of mind. So you begin to not be so much on the walking itself, but how the walking is perceived and whether there is someone walking and not. Yeah, you. So like this, we could continue with all the examples of life. It's always a question of spaciousness, which means non-clinging, non-fixation, together with the necessary precision to perform a task. Huh? There's some more coming? You will try? You will try. Oh, thank you. That's good. That's good. You can come back on me later on if you want. You want to get into that pause when doing the breathing, yes. This is because you have been practicing breathing meditation so much that that is the habit of still continuing with the breathing awareness. And this is okay. In the pause, you are allowed to still notice the breath, just you don't emphasize it, but it continues by habit. And it's a wonderful thing that the mind continues by itself, resting on the breath, settling in there. So it is already a pause of the voluntary meditation. It becomes now a meditation that happens by itself. So this is already that pause you found. You just thought that the object of meditation, the breath, should disappear in the pause. No, it doesn't have to disappear. It can continue. Now the other pause is, of course, it's possible to go away from the breathing. And for you, in order to do that, when you sit at home, for example, at your meditation place, do some practicing on the breathing. And then when you want to make a pause, look out of the window into the sky. It is a slight changing of object, but you don't meditate on the sky. It is just pause. And a slight shift of attention, this makes it easier for you to feel the pause. And this movement is actually something which we need to learn in meditation. We concentrate on something. Here's the breathing, I imitate the breathing. And then we don't focus anymore. And it is this movement that we learn. It is, okay, job is done. Leave it. And we learn to make this movement. And in the beginning, to just do this movement is a little bit difficult. We need a different object. We need something to direct it to. So we let go here. And before we cling there, we say, not necessary. No need for clinging. Yeah? But because we shift, and especially if it is just open sky, then there is not much clinging involved. Yeah, so that's an easy one to go to. Like this, you can find your way into the pause. Okay. Good big chapter. I repeat for everybody. How do you practice when you're caught by intense emotion? Do I take time for that? Yes, please. Okay. The first step is the pause. That's the step we already talked about. The first step, when you have an emotion, like, would you give me an example? Should I take anger or some other emotion? What would be your Would you like an example? Could be a fear or anger. I take anger. It's a little bit more. It's easier to grasp. It's a little bit easier for the example to be understood. So, I'm angry. I'm angry, and you know, all the anger is rising in me, and I want to speak. I want to shout. I want to hit whatever the anger wants to do. Then I want, the basic idea of anger is wants to destroy its object, wants to finish with it. Yeah, that's basically the intention. I know this is going to do more harm than good. So there is a motivation. No, I don't want to follow the anger. This motivation is telling me, wait, don't speak now. This can create a lot of harm. It can destroy the friendship. It can, you know, don't hit, don't do anything, you know. This is what I think in every culture we say, take 3 deep breaths before saying something. Yeah, it's this kind of, you know, like, okay. And this pause, no matter how you create it, sometimes it's really so intense as that you said someone like holds onto the table, you know, in order not to say something, can be as intense as that, or it can be a pause which the others don't notice. And the pause, you can create it a little bit like I said to our sister here before. You can create it by directing for the time being quickly your attention to something else. So the breath would be one like this, but you can also just hold on to looking at the flowers, or you help yourself to not react, right? Because this is angry reaction which is about to happen. And this pause enables the second step. In that pause, you have a little moment, you know, to feel what could be helpful now. What can help me? What can help me, and what can help the situation? This is what we need the pause for. For example, one thing that could help me, because I don't know the way myself, is like, SOS Buddhas, please help me, you know? What can help here? You know, like a little prayer of desperation, you know, completely desperate, you know. But it directs our mind already to the refuge, to what we have confidence in. Or, what will help me? For example, you have a fight with your partner, maybe you have children, I'm only inventing, I know nothing about you. Say, oh, you think of your children. For my children, I won't fight now. You know, it's like the love for your children, which gives you then more energy to work with the emotion. And within the remedies that help us to work with the emotions, there are some which are very, very capable of transforming our way of seeing the situation. For example, you get angry at a person. That person is really behaving in a stupid way. And then one of the famous remedies is seeing how that person is caught in his or her own emotions. Just this thought, this, if that can come in the pause, well, the other person is just as stuck as myself, you know, to realize that the other person is not free. Is not acting out of free will, but actually is acting out of a whole lot of emotional patterns which make this person behave so arrogant, behave so whatever. A quick shift into see how unfree that person is, a quick realization of, okay, if I just anger against anger or anger against pride, it won't work. Yeah? And then this would be in this whole realm of the remedies, the second step, also sometimes called antidotes. There are many different different remedies that we can use. For example, just to continue breathing is also one of the remedies. Just to continue staying on the breath, not suppressing the anger, but breathing with the anger. And then by the nature of that, because part of your attention is on the breathing, the anger will change. It will evolve. And new way of seeing things will arise by itself. There's many things to be said about that. And then there comes the third step. The third step is actually a completely different view of the situation. A classical one is, I'm so angry. What do I need to learn from this situation? Instead of pushing the undesired away, taking it, wow, we say in Tibetan tradition, wow, the Lama has come to visit. The Guru has come for the visit. That's a wonderful situation to learn, because that emotion is now the Guru. Yeah, is what I need to learn from. So, big Guru visiting. Yes, heavy. The meaning of the word Guru in Sanskrit is someone with a heavy weight. Someone was, yeah, and heavy blessing, and you know, this is like that which makes me angry. The Guru is visiting. So taking the difficulty as the path, this is actually the shift on the third level of working with emotions. And then we have, of course, due to these previous three steps, pause, remedy, and shift of vision, there's much more space. Yeah, we become skilled, and we have that space which enables the fourth step, which is looking into the emotion itself. Now, a trained practitioner could perhaps look immediately, because of having looked so often, then even when the situation arises that makes me angry, because of the habit of looking into the mental movements, I might look directly. But most practitioners, they will do that at home. They have mastered the situation in their business life, for example, on the street, wherever they were. They have mastered that with the other techniques. And when you have the moment to meditate at home, you bring the situation back to your awareness, back to your meditation, and you try to feel that emotion that was the strongest in the situation. For example, the anger. And you can feel the anger arising when you think of the situation again. And then at that moment, you turn towards the anger and you try to look where is the center of that anger. That's where you feel it strongest. And then you make the surprising discovery of no substance, nothing substantial to be found. And this is the liberating experience of realizing the nature of the emotion. And that's a vipassana moment. And that's the moment of knowing the nature of what's happening. And then in the so far, this is these four steps, they are a summary of seven steps which the Buddha explained of how to deal with emotions. But they are a summary of these seven. The Tibetan, or the, let's say the Tantric tradition, the Mahamudra tradition, added a fifth step, which is called taking the emotions as a path, which means once you have realized the nature of an emotion several times, then you go into situations which provoke that emotion. So you search, you look for them. You go into challenging situations. You're not waiting until karma produces, you know, at some point the next situation to work with. You go into situations where they arise quickly, because they're so challenging. So this is enhancing the process of realization, of purification of karma through realization. That would be the fifth step. Okay? So these five steps, they were in that form written down by Karma Chakme Rinpoche, a famous Lama of of I think the 19th century in a letter to a Lama who was in retreat and who had that question. You know, I'm practicing very well, I'm doing my practice since many years with bodhicitta and so on, but there is always some aspect of dealing with the emotions which I cannot handle. And in answer to that letter, because Kamachakme was in retreat himself, he wrote a letter explaining these five steps, which he called the peacock. The peacock as a symbol of a bird who can eat grains that are indigest for other birds, for other creatures, and develops this beautiful colors, you know, this rainbow-like colors of the feathers of the rainbow. So the peacock has become a symbol in Indian Buddhism for the capacity to use the mental poisons, the mind poisons, in order to develop the beauty of awakening. Okay, so if you search for Kamachakme, my colleague Anila Rinchenpalme, where she translated that letter into, and the teaching of Gyanar Rinpoche on that text into English, I think it's simply called Working with Emotions. Look into internet, Working with Emotions. If you see any reference, Anila Rinchenpalme or Kamachakme Rinpoche, that should be the text. Maybe you can find it. Okay. You decide. Yes. That's always good. That's the pause. Oh yes, oh yes, they're all your friends. They're all on the same road with us. Okay, yeah, I will follow the direction of your finger. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Yes, I will try to look.
I want to talk about the transition.
Transition.
From the feeling of self.
You're a social worker and you're looking for the transition from the sense of self to a feeling for others.
I feel.
You feel. Mm-hmm.
But my vessel
is broken. It's broken.
Not really broken.
It's still there, but it's damaged. Your vessel cannot hold. Yes, yes, I will help you not to believe it. Yes. Good. To take it home.
Reflecting, when you're a therapist, teacher, shepherd, I don't know how you call it. So things come through you in a way. But how do you, sometimes you connect so strongly, so deeply.
How do you take care of the boundaries when so many impressions come through and you feel so much going on around you, and actually what's going on around you is going on inside of you?
There is no self.
There is no self. It's not so complicated. You're not the only one feeling that. Mm-hmm. So, first we need to take care of ourselves. That's the first thing. And that's why I like so much that you also work with a focus, with the support for meditation. That you feel your body, you feel the breathing sensations, you develop a good presence with shamatha. Yeah? And this is, there's no need to establish more of a boundary than that. The shamatha on the physical sensations, on the breathing, or even on an outer object, visual object or something, this already settles the mind in that simple presence of now. And you don't go for spaciousness at that moment. You go for more for precision. You want to feel precisely and stay there. You don't use your antenna to, because spaciousness and feeling the others, they are so close to each other that you first you need the grounding of, you know, Mother Earth, you know, walking meditation, the earth in your body, yes, and then you stabilize that. Okay, and when you feel stable, and that's what you need actually to do every day, every evening when you come home as a social worker, you need to do that. You need to take care of yourself, yes? And it's very important to balance, because your heart seems to go out very easily to others. You seem to feel a lot, and maybe not everyone feels so much like you, so you might feel very overwhelmed by a lot alone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's okay. I continue, okay? Maybe you find some nuggets in there, okay? So with our sensitivity, we need to learn to handle it, so to speak, to manage it well. As human beings, we are so sensitive. If we were to live our full sensitivity without wisdom, it would constantly overwhelm us. Now, especially when you have been traumatized, and there have been traumas in your childhood, in your everyday experience, then the boundaries are even weaker. Yes, and there's a lot of fear, and yet there is this heightened sensitivity. There's so much learning to do. And here we need to do all the stabilizing aspects of meditation. Stabilizing means clear focus, not too long, not overdoing it, and a lot of attention to oneself. So really good taking care of yourself. So this is where all these meditation full with kindness and self-acceptance come into whatever we feel, including, and that's one of the very current feelings, including the feeling of helplessness. The helplessness, the not being able to change the situations which we feel, is some of the most distressing emotions in this world. To be able to accept oneself in this helpless situation where one really wants things to go differently, one feels so much with everyone in the situation, and right now one can hardly do anything. And I say hardly, because this is where the wisdom comes in. In order not to feel overwhelmed, without stepping out and trying to save the world, we can at least make wishes. We can at least, and that's where the force of mantra is so powerful, because you don't even think about the wish that you do. You just do Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha, or the shorter one, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, usually pronounced. A mantra of compassion, may everyone awaken. You can say it in your language, may everyone be free of suffering. You can do these metta thoughts, may everyone be happy and have the causes of happiness, may everyone be free of suffering. So you turn the confusion which you feel and the helplessness, you turn it into a wish. And this is like allowing your heart to breathe again, because now it can express itself. Otherwise it gets stuck. We feel so much, we are overwhelmed, there is a feeling of helplessness, blockage. And the blockage makes the heart go crazy. Not only closed in, some of them they feel like they cannot feel their heart anymore, but this is the protection from having felt too much. Actually, we are still very sensitive. The vessel never breaks. We will talk about that later. You can still feel, but in order to feel all of that, you need to know how to give expression to that care that you wish to offer to the world. Human beings are by nature very caring. They want to help others who are hungry, who are thirsty, who are in pain. It's natural to help them. And when this impulse is blocked, we are suffering even more. And as a social worker, you're constantly faced with situations where you would like to help much more than what you can. And so this is the first thing. Look that you can find a prayer, something that expresses the emotion in your heart. Like when you see a Tibetan watching TV and they understand what's going on, because many of them, they speak English nowadays, they understand all the news, but they have the mala in their hand, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani. They see the last tornado, they see the war here and there, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And immediately there is a release of the tension of those news coming in, and it's transported into a wish for all of humanity. It's into a non-sectarian wish for everyone concerned. So there is an immediate release of that tension. And you see that the mala, which lies normally on the ankle, when the situation becomes intense, the hands goes up to the heart, and they are reciting here, because it's really very much with the heart energy that we need to communicate. And then you find other ways. It's not the last thing. Then your creative mind finds more ways to speak, to contemplate, to help. This is what you have learned as a social worker. And then I want to talk a little bit about this vessel, this receptacle. Vessel is another word for receptacle. And Actually, this is even used in the teachings to become a good vessel to hold the teachings and not to be broken, leaking, having holes, being rusty, being muddy, you know, like a pure vessel. Now, we become a pure vessel, a vessel that can hold the experiences of this world, if we are not leaking. And this is the translation of Pali and Sanskrit words which are indicating distraction. So in order to be able to hold the experience of this world better, we need to take care that our mind doesn't leak in the sense of always going off to this film and that chat and this imprint, this and these news and so on. This is the shamatha part. We need to stabilize the mind, not moving like in an escape mode, in the flight mode, to all kinds of objects to distract oneself. And this is very difficult for people under stress. When I get under stress, the tendency to go for something which distracts me is bigger than when I'm not under stress. So this is where the self-care comes in, when you feel that difficult to hold my life, you know, and I feel like I'm flowing in all directions and sometimes exploding and sometimes feeling quite dead and I don't have the energy anymore. This is the time to not do anything. You have to stop all the gadgets you have, no smartphones, no TV, you know, just relaxing wherever you can, maybe leaning against a tree. And it might take hours, days, weeks, and months that you have to find yourself back. You need to really take good care. Most of us, we just have half an hour in the evening maybe, and then maybe half an hour in the morning, but take more if you can. Squeeze out from your life these precious hours of not doing anything, of not being preoccupied with any distraction. And that, in that safe space where you're not doing anything, this is where you begin to feel yourself. This is where you begin to drink from the source. As I was saying, you begin to feel your resources. You feel that this overburdened mind that was incapable yesterday night to love anybody, you know, this mind is relaxing now and having some warm feelings for that little fly at the window. So I feel motivated to open the window, you know, a little warm feeling there, you know, just to let the fly fly out. Yes, it's like you're very, very slowly. Very slowly, the signs of your true nature, they will manifest again. And it needs so much patience. And I'm, of course, we know the life is very speedy. So in this speedy life, you need to find those moments of doing nothing, no task, no demands, no interaction. Taking care of this very sensitive being so that again your antenna can move out, you can feel yourself and you begin to feel others again. There's no way around that. Yes, when you know the path, it goes a little bit quicker, but it's not like you can't just snip your fingers and you're back in full resonance. No, no, it doesn't go like that. Never, ever. You have to take your time. Don't try to meditate too much. Don't give yourself another task. But let your meditation be to trust the wall that it will not break down as you lean against it. You know, just that. This, at least the wall right now is trustworthy for the moment. Okay, for the moment. The tree, whatever. Drink a sip of water. Okay, there's still water here. You know, like if you are really to the basics, and this is how we are, human beings. We need stability, security. We need something to drink. We need something to eat. And we need love. We need then, the next movement will be that we move towards a person where we trust also the way we are together, the communication, and also there we don't do much. It's not that we are going to see a film together and so on. It's too much. It's too much. Just being. Just being. And this is something we need to learn, to just be together. Both of us relaxing from the demands of the world, but already feeling each other in the common path of relaxing with the wish to find back the energy to open up to the world again. Because many of you have professions where you're in a very social way, trying to give a good input into society. So we all need that energy. And the source is always there, but it's kind of a source which waits for us and which opens up when we have the patience to sit next to it. It's not like, okay, I need to drink from the source, so let me have a sip of water to continue. It's not like that. We relax into the source. We relax into that ground nature of our being by going through all the steps of feeling the exhaustion, the helplessness, and then a little moment of clarity, and then maybe the need to sleep, and then more clarity, and then maybe the need to drink something, and then, you know, when you're really exhausted, you can feel all these different steps of how you come closer to the source. And then there will be moments when you know, yes, now I'm connected again. That's it. Now I'm back to normal, so to speak. I'm this normal, natural self. And don't then jump up too quickly to immediately do something, but stay a little bit longer, take a bath, and then go. Oh. No, do you turn it over? Oh, yeah, it's the food, it's the cooks. Now, we have to be respectful with the cooks and all the team. So, last question. Oh, she's a good singer, yes. Deva. The question is about frustration. At first she said you can find this mantra. Maybe you can put it on the board, the name, so that everyone can then find it on the internet. You can find beautiful other mantras as well by the same singer. There's different singers, but she is one of the best ones. And so she will put that on the board. And then the question is about frustration. What to do when you don't get what you wish for over a long period of time? Then you have to find out, is it important or not? It's very important. Then you have to get out of the situation where this very important wish is not fulfilled. If you can't, the other option is to let go of the wish. Now, if it is very important for me, for example, the very important wish in my life, to give an easier example, is to bring together the path of healing and the path of awakening. Yeah, so I needed, I had this as the strongest wish in my mind. And I searched in medicine, didn't find it there, in therapy, didn't find it there, in homeopathy. There were always limits, yes? And then the Dharma is this fulfillment of that wish, which is really the very important wish in my life. I did give up the wish to have children, for example. You don't seem to need to give that up. It is, but yes, there were wishes, very important wishes. That was the wish why I married, that's why we married, and so on. But we both wanted to practice more, and the children had to wait. And at a certain time, we had to give that up. I had to give up country, I had to give up my Sangha for other more important wishes. Then you move on if you can. Okay? Not yet. Not quite. Are there, normally there's more than two options, right? The option to give it up or to go to where it can be fulfilled. Is there a third one? Is that maybe the third possibility to fulfill the wish yourself? To go towards the wish-fulfilling mind inside of yourself, and without changing the situation, to find the fulfillment by going to the source? That is very demanding, but it's always possible. You can realize awakening in the middle of a prison. It's possible. Just to give an far out example.